Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown? Sleep Tight Stories.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, welcome to Movie Crush, Friday interview edish. Annie edish. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Chuck. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm super excited to be here.
I know why. You're dead. You're dead.
Yes.
It's really hard to get that song out of your head.
It's like a weird combination of macabre and like a pop tune.
Yeah, it's... You know, she just passed away like a month ago.
Oh, wow. I heard they went and found her purposefully and they discovered she'd become a painter.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think her name is Nora Tanega, and she was a folk singer, painter, experimental musician. It's very interesting. She grew up in California and I think kind of stayed there and went to New York for a little while and... got involved in the 60s village folk scene.
And like, you do.
Yeah, put out just these killer songs. Went back to California and I think like spent the rest of her days in Claremont, where she went to college. She went back there and I think taught painting and just sort of lived this quiet life.
Well, it lives on in the TV show. That is one of the things that they kept for the FX TV show.
Let's talk about the TV show real quick.
Yeah.
I saw, and I think I might have told you this in one of the episodes, I saw like, I think four episodes on a plane flight. I think I knew, or maybe I didn't know, it was a TV show.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that would have gotten past me.
Right.
Or maybe I knew and it just, you know, there's so much going on with TV these days. But I was on a flight and I was like, holy shit, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
And I immediately turned it on and just Emily was cracking up because I was like, people were literally looking at me. I was laughing. I was LOLing so much on this flight.
Yes.
So it was really funny. I miss the main guys, but I think they did a great job with the TV show.
Yeah, it's excellent. I love how they incorporated different types of vampires, like emotional vampire, energy vampire.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, and the Cursed Hat episode, after I watched it, I thought, "This no way can this possibly exist. It is too great." So I immediately rewatched
that one.
It.
Which one?
Oh, the Cursed Hat with Nick Kroll.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was one of the good ones. It's perfect.
Oh, man. I bet that hat was so much fun to make for our department. It was so cool looking.
Yes. And that's one of my favorite things about the show and this movie, What We Do in the Shadows, is that it's just so, you can tell the creators love these stories we've grown up with.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's a cursed hat. it's so apparently cursed. Uh-huh. Like immediately somebody dies and then he falls through the floor. It's just, oh, beautiful.
It was great. And he refuses, you know, to acknowledge that and to not wear it. He just has to wear it.
Even at the end, after all of this stuff has gone wrong, he still has that.
Oh, man. I need to see all of it now. And I told myself when I came home, I was like, I got to get right into that.
Yes, I will say it's got one of the best extended universes. I won't spoil it, but basically they're saying all of these vampire universes exist within
each other.
So
how many seasons are there?
There's only one. The second season comes out April 2020.
Oh, perfect timing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I can catch up now.
And it actually has a really solid cliffhanger, I think.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are there any... Oh, I might want to be surprised. No. Are there any visits from any of the movie cast members?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there are.
All right.
All
I don't want anything else.
Yes. Just a little teaser. It's excellent. Highly recommend.
I figured they would do that at some point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're, I'm sure you know all the stuff that I found out, but for the benefit of the listener, they have been talking about a werewolf movie.
Werewolves.
Yeah, werewolves.
Ah!
And the last thing I heard was Taika saying... We kind of feel bad because it's going to take us forever. So just don't expect it anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
He said something about like we're like two dads.
Yeah, saying, keep saying I'll be home for Christmas.
Yeah, I'll be home for Christmas and we're never coming home.
Right.
But like eventually we'll come home for Christmas.
I hope so. I mean, this movie took them forever as well because I think they did. It's based on a short they did in 2005 called What We Do in the Shadows, Interviews with Some Vampires. Have you seen it?
No.
It's clearly like... It feels like you're watching a college movie, which it is, and it's a lot less polished, but it still has some gems in it, just gems. And
how long is it?
It's about 30 minutes. It's on YouTube, and a lot of the scenes you can see are pretty similar, but there's different things. Like they discuss how do vampires keep their clothes when they turn into bats, like,
right?
Things like that. And the actor who plays Deacon was very clearly sick, like obviously sick, and they incorporated that into his character in the movie, that he's just kind of lazy and bored.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So, full disclosure, I should preface this by saying I'm not saying that I came up with What We Do in the Shadows and I was copied. But
yes,
my friend Mike and I, Mike is a previous guest on the show with the Vernon, Florida episode, we used to make short films and stuff in the 90s around Atlanta and have these guerrilla screenings before YouTube and all that stuff. And we made about a 45-minute documentary called Redneck Vampire that he had this – Mike does all these characters. He's got a bunch of them he's always done just for friends and little short films and stuff. And one of them was RV, this guy Michael Van Meter, who was supposedly like 170-something years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was from South Georgia. We did this recreated reenactment footage that looks a lot like the one in the movie. We used all these, and it's on YouTube. People can watch it if you want.
Oh, awesome.
There are all these archival images of like these creepy Middle Ages stuff that they use the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw What We Do, and I play the straight man, the interviewer.
Yes.
And we play it straight, and we interview him about the nuts and bolts of being a vampire, and like it's very deadpan.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw What We Do in the Shadows, because I was a little late to it, I saw it, I think, a couple of years after it came out, or maybe a year after it came out. I texted Mike immediately, and I was like, dude, have you seen this?
Mm-hmm.
And he watched it and texted me the next day, and he was like, wow. And he was like, I don't think they saw the Redneck Vampire and ripped this off. He's like, but it's really, really similar.
Wow.
Yeah, like, I think people should check out some of it at least. It's really, really similar. And let me put a button on that little conversation by saying we also did a short years ago that was really, 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 really similar to Laser Cats on SNL.
Oh.
Like so similar. I was like, is someone watching this?
Yeah.
I mean, it looked exactly like it. We had cats shooting lasers, the same cutout style of animation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It just kind of made me wonder if there was some like underground.
Yeah, there's somebody mining your YouTuber for script ideas.
It's really weird. I don't think they copied us, but it was so similar. It was like,
yeah.
But it made me happy. I was like, clearly we had a fun idea.
Yeah.
Because this is great.
That's one of the things I loved about this movie, and I think in my previous choice, Spider-Verse, it's the same, where you can tell the people who made it love the genre.
Yeah.
Like, there's just this kind of honest, genuine love in it, and it reflects, and it makes me appreciate it all the more. It's super goofy.
Yeah.
But they know all the tropes, like the the crucifix, the bleeding of the eyes. Uh-huh. But they, and I've read, describe it as, can you imagine, we like to think if you had immortality that you would better yourself, but what if you just get to like this age and you're that's just who you are, and every day you're lazy and you waste it? Because at its heart, if you described it to somebody without the vampire bit, it's very boring.
Sure. And I think that's kind of the key to some of the best mockumentaries, especially with Christopher Guest, is sort of finding a window into the mundane and the ridiculous, whether it's dog shows.
Yes.
And this, to me, stands right up there with the best, like, guest documentaries of all time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think the key for these is keeping them short, keeping them at, like, this is 85 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's about right for these mockumentaries. Christopher Guest keeps his pretty short, too. It's a genre, I think, that has a – I think it has a cap on how long you can take the joke and knowing when to get out of it.
Yeah, yeah, it has to be really tight. I know we'll probably get into this later, but they filmed 150 hours for this.
I saw that.
And they had three edits of it, three
cuts. I know,
cuts.
Isn't that crazy?
They said jokingly that one day they might just put all the footage online and let people...
I was wondering about that.
...make their own, but then there's the fear that someone would make a superior product than you.
Well, I don't know, though, because... You can't make like, oh, well, I'm going to make the 2.5 hour version then.
Yeah.
Like, that's too long. You can't do that for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's true. It just feels like they were so familiar with it. They had been working on it a long time.
Yeah.
I love, too, that a lot of the people that are in this are not actors. So it was,
oh, really?
Yeah. Stu is not an actor.
Oh, really? I wondered about
that. No, he's a real IT guy.
I love Stu.
They told him he was the IT support. And he had no idea he was going to be in it that much.
That is amazing.
Yeah, he was just a friend of Taika Waititi.
All right.
And yeah.
He did a great job. And he's sort of one of the beloved characters in the movie.
Yes.
I love how they all just rally around him.
I know.
They love Stu.
They love him so much.
It's so funny. And he's not even that fun or anything.
Yeah.
I think it's just the novelty of a human friend.
Yeah. Well, and he comes in and he shows them all this new technology.
Yeah. He introduces
new technology. It's been around forever.
When they're crowded around the laptop, it's so funny.
They watch the sunrise and they're like,
oh, yeah. That was amazing.
It's
so
excellent.
I guess the idea is they could watch the sunrise on a video.
Right.
But not for real.
Because again, as vampires, they will burst into flame and light.
There are so many small moments that that are almost like, and that's the thing with these mockumentaries. It's about the small moments, I think. I mean, they're the jokey jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But the small moments, like with the dead vampire hunter, and they get out the stake, and he's like, it looks like a sanded down chair leg.
Yeah.
Did he do that by hand?
I think he did that, yes. That's one of my favorite scenes. I can't wait till we get to that part.
Well, we can jump all around, too. But the three versions you mentioned, they did like a really super jokey version.
Yeah.
One that was way more story-focused, and then they decided that the right mix was the one they should release.
Right.
Of the two.
Yeah, and I would agree. I haven't seen the others, obviously, but...
Do you know how much funny shit is waiting out there?
I know. If there's a funny cut...
I know. They had to lose so many great bits, I bet.
Yeah.
Just to get it down to 85 minutes and to get the right story mix.
Yeah, and they... one interesting thing about this movie is Jemaine Clement and Taika Waititi, they wrote, I think, 150-page script. Like, they had a script, but they didn't show it to the cast or crew.
I saw that. That's amazing.
They just tried to lead them.
That was their little secret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing and kind of frightening way, I would imagine, to approach it, but also really fun.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I know that's how Guest works. They don't write scripts. They hand people scenes of, like, kind of outline scenes, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe if there's a line or joke or something they thought of, but otherwise it's just... Here's what we want to do in the scene. This is where we want to get in and get out.
Yeah.
And, you know, go have fun.
Yeah, I acted in a movie like that once.
Oh, really?
And it's probably a really bad movie. I've never seen it, but it was super fun. They were just like, you're going to start here. Mm-hmm. You're going to end here. Here are the beats we want to hit.
Right.
And it was like a delight.
Was it comedy?
No, it was a horror. I guess it was kind of a mixture, but it was definitely more horror than comedy.
As an actor, is that intimidating or just super freeing and fun or a bit of both?
I think some actors find it really intimidating.
Yeah, it probably depends.
I loved it. I thought it was really, really fun. Because then you get to kind of just be in the moment and react to things. Mm-hmm. And you're not super worried about what's my next line and how do I make it look natural and I have to hit this mark and all those things. So I found it really liberating. But I know some actors who hate it.
Yeah, I mean, improv is a different muscle. Some actors are like, no, I need preparation and I need my lines and I need to really practice and do the method or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are two very different beasts.
Yes, for sure. But I feel like this movie, since they have the script, but they just didn't give it to anybody.
I know.
They said
that's so
it's
cool.
Mostly improv, which makes me appreciate it all the more.
Well, before we dive into some of the specifics, let's talk about the look of it. Do you know what the budget was?
$1.6 million, I think.
Okay. Not a lot of money.
No.
It looks great.
Yeah, it really does.
The production design is awesome. The costumes are amazing. I think they hit just the right mark with the special effects. Like, it's enough.
Yeah.
But it's not reliant.
Right.
You can tell they don't have a lot of money, but that gives it a little charm, I think.
Yeah. The most expensive special effect shot in the movie, most people don't even notice, it's when they matted the table, when they're out at the diner, so that they don't have reflections in the table.
Really?
Yes.
And they had to spend the most money on that. Oh, that's so – I bet that pissed them off so much.
Yes, but you know we would have noticed if they hadn't done
it.
Like, it's one of those things you don't notice, but if they hadn't done it, you would have been like,
Yeah, and they don't overdo it with the special effects gags, so when they happen, they're really funny. Like, the first time early on when they're having the dishwashing argument – when they both, soar up to the float up to the ceiling.
Hissing at each other.
It's sort of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And you're not expecting it yet the first time.
Right.
But every time I've seen it, I laugh at like really loud at that part.
Me too.
It gets me every time.
Every time I watch this movie, and I've seen it a lot, I still regularly laugh through it. Still funny.
And probably notice new things.
Yeah.
I think that's the deal with these docs too, or these mocks. Like I saw Spinal Tap. Are you big on that movie? Is that one of yours?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, my God.
I got to see it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, do you like the Christopher Guest stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You should start where it started then.
Okay. go back to the beginning.
Yeah. It's I saw that movie probably 30-plus times, and every time I noticed new little jokes. The good example is there's one scene later in Spinal Tap where they release an album later. The idea, though. It's a rock band.
Yeah.
And they have a black album. It's all black. And they have a signing, and they don't draw attention to it. They don't make a joke out of it. But very subtly, you notice they're all holding black magic markers
nice.
To sign a black album. And I noticed that on the 30th viewing. I was like, oh, my God, look, they've got black markers with a black album.
Yes.
And it's just that stuff that makes these things so rich, I think.
Yeah. It just it gives you such a joy for the depth they went into it and how much they clearly were like, okay, what if we did this little thing that probably no one will notice?
Yeah.
But it's the care there.
Right.
Ugh.
And because it's like for the 10 people who notice this, they're going to think it's the coolest, funniest detail, and it's worth it.
Yeah, and just knowing, having that appreciation for what you're making, I think even if you didn't notice that, you could still feel it. And when you do eventually notice it, it just gives you that rewatch value.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a Flight of the Conchords fan?
I came very late to that, but yes. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah.
So this actually was my first Taika Waititi, possibly Jemaine Clement.
Experience?
Yeah, it was. And then immediately after that, I was like, okay, wait, I got to go find everything else they've done.
Yeah, I was late on this. I was trying to parse out if I had seen Thor Ragnarok first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I was late. I don't know why this got past me. Or maybe it was the other way around, but I was definitely a year or two late on this.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about this movie is the timing of it. It came out in 2014, and it wasn't a hit in New Zealand. So they didn't get international distribution, so they started a Kickstarter, $400,000, so that they could show it in the United States.
Oh, a distribution Kickstarter.
Yeah, and they got it in a month. And even at only a handful of theaters, they broke the top 20 box office chart. Mm-hmm. It became the most pirated movie of 2015.
I did see that.
And it just happened to coincide with internet culture of GIFs and memes. And this entire movie is GIFable and memeable.
Yeah.
And so I feel like a lot of people, I didn't see it in theaters, but it just sort of came to me via love on the internet.
Social media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. I mean, when I was writing out what I wanted to talk about, it's hard not to just quote the whole thing.
I do have lines, of course.
I do, too.
We'll indulge each other for sure.
Hopefully there's some overlapping and it's not just an entire episode of quotes.
I did see, and I'm sure you know this too, that Taika Waititi based his performance on his mother.
Yes.
And Jermaine Clement on Gary Oldman's Dracula.
Yes.
But Taika Waititi is – Emily and I were watching it again last night and both of us were like, he's so goddamn cute.
He's so adorable.
Like, we both have big crushes on him, and especially in this role.
Mm-hmm.
He's just so lovable, and he's just adorable.
He is. That's one of the best – the things I think works most about this movie is none of the vampires are frightening, except maybe Peter.
He's so great. I love Peter.
Peter's excellent. He's like Nosferatu, straight up. But Taika Waititi is sort of your – because they're living together. The plot is these vampires are living together.
Uh-huh.
And he's the one with the chore wheel. He's the one trying to get them to put the towels down before they drain their victims.
What's the line here? Sorry, because the line is so perfect.
He hasn't done the dishes in 5 years.
Because they're all sort of in the interview portions, they're all introducing one another, kind of.
Yeah.
And Jermaine Clement as Vladislav says, he was an 18th century dandy, so he could be a bit fussy.
Yes. And it's a really clever opening bit where they basically, Viago, Taika Waititi, he's going around waking up his flatmates at 6 p.m. because that's when they wake up.
I know. That was so cute, too.
Yes, because the alarm goes off.
Wakey,
rises out of his coffin.
He sort of halfway rises, though, and gives a little look.
He's so awkward.
Oh, my God. It's the best.
Yes. And then he goes around and he wakes up his flatmates, and each one just is such a clear, quick, oh, this is this character.
Uh-huh.
Like Deacon says, "Hi, how was your night?" And Deacon says, "Had sex with a dog."
Right.
They're like, okay, he's the bad boy rebel.
Right.
One of my favorite lines from him is, "When you become a vampire, you become sexy."
Right.
And then Vladislav is having like some orgy.
Yeah, some weird orgy.
Yeah,
because of his mind powers.
Right, right. And then Peter is behind this sort of tomb thing, and he's got all these bones at his feet.
Yeah. Oh, it's a spinal column.
Yes.
And then at the end of the scene, waking up Peter, he goes, "Yeah, I got you this chicken."
And just sort of closes it in, and he's like, "You know, if you want to clean up in here, I can bring you a broom." And Peter is.
Well, and they're all kind of scared of Peter, which is great, too,
yes.
How that works on another level, is they're all vampires,
mm-hmm.
but Peter's, 876 years old.
Right.
Or no, that's Vladislav. Peter's like 8,000 years old.
Yes.
And so he's just so, like, deteriorated and scary and...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, it's great.
And Vladislav, he says he was 16 when he was bitten, but life was rough for a 16-year-old back then.
It's like clearly not 16.
Right.
So, yeah, Vladislav is the next. He's 876. He's a really great guy, a bit of a pervert. He has some pretty old ideas about things.
Yes.
And, of course, that smash cuts to we should have slaves.
Yes. Yeah, that's one thing I love about them is they're so clearly out of their time. Like the way they speak and the way they dress, it's just like doesn't fit at all.
Yeah, which is kind of a tropey thing, the person, time traveler, like not fitting in society. But the way they do it is because, you got the great stuff at home, the domestic story. And then it takes on a whole new life when they go out in modern Wellington.
Yeah, modern Wellington, maybe.
Like bar hopping and club hopping in Wellington.
Yes, which, by the way, there is a tour video for Wellington that Taika Waititi did as Viago.
Oh, really?
And it's beautiful.
Just do everything with that character.
I mean, right, and they have... It's really cute. They turned the Wellington into Vellington, and it has blood dripping off of it. They have the best tourism videos in New Zealand.
So now they have embraced it, even though it didn't do well there. Interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure just the that's the amazing thing. Like, it has a TV show. It didn't do that well.
Yeah.
But that's just the popularity it gained on the internet.
A true cult film.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, and he's become New Zealand's, like, favorite son.
Yes, yes.
For good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And we both worship him, so.
We do. I adore him.
Yeah, he's just, he can do it all. It's amazing.
Yeah.
His talent is just, like, intimidating.
He's got a million projects coming up.
Oh, I'm sure.
Super busy.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole plot of it is they're getting ready for the Unholy Masquerade.
Yeah.
And they've invited this documentary crew who were wearing crucifixes to come.
And, that was all great.
Yes. Come and document it and what the flatting situation of living with other vampires. And along with this, when you're introduced to Vladislav, you're also introduced to the Beast.
Yes.
Which is a recurring character.
Who you don't know
but it is yet. Yeah. This Beast, like, Vladislav used to be really terrifying and powerful. Mm-hmm. And he, after battles with the Beast, is kind of having performance issues, can't transform into animals like he used to.
That line is great, too. He said he used to be able to turn into animals, but now he can never get the faces right.
Yes, which comes back later when he's a cat,
I know.
His face is still there.
That was a great payoff of that joke, I thought.
Yes. That's something I didn't notice until multiple viewings.
Oh, the cat thing?
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't see it.
Well, I mean, they don't focus on it. It's kind of a passing shot.
Yeah.
But very funny.
Very, very worth it.
As far as the plot setup, though, I mean, if you want to call it that, I think that's the other key to these mockumentaries. It's got to be super clean and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Dog show.
Mm-hmm.
Performance. You know, community theater performance.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. This is the Unholy Masquerade 2 days before New Zealand Documentary Board is invited in. That's kind of the key, though, with these, I think, is to keep it really simple. You don't want to get bogged down in plot points and details.
Yeah.
But it still has to have some story and character development.
Yes.
Which they do. The stuff with Taika Waititi's vampire is really sweet, you know, with his lost love.
Yeah, all of them. I think it's funny that they're trying to answer this question that you maybe didn't even know you have, is how did all of them end up in New Zealand, in Wellington, New Zealand?
Yeah, that is kind of funny.
And he had his familiar send him in a coffin after his love moved to New Zealand, but his familiar accidentally sent him the wrong place. It took him forever to get to New Zealand.
Yeah, 18 months.
And by the time he arrived, she had found someone else and moved on. But he still harbors these feelings for her.
Right, and masturbates in his coffin.
Yes, which apparently was just a joke for the crew, but they decided to leave it in
really?
There.
Yeah. That was the one joke that was a little like, I don't know. It didn't quite fit in to me.
Yeah.
It was fine, but I was like, interesting. That didn't quite fit with the rest.
Well, now you know.
Yeah. That was great, though, later in the movie when he gets on the video chat with the—
Yes.
And it's just
he
sort of
Skypes
like—
him.
Yeah, by the way, and then he ends up—
He flips it and is like, you were supposed to turn me into a vampire and now 90. I'm really old. What am I going to do? I was waiting my whole life wasted.
Yeah, and he's just kind of like, okay.
Bye. Closes it.
That's so great.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes. That it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I think Viago is 376 and Deacon is 183.
Yeah.
So he's the youngest.
He's the young bad boy.
And he's sort of modeled after the Twilight. They all sort of took these classic vampires.
Right.
Even though Nick comes by later as,
well, yeah,
thinking he's Twilight.
Yes. That is the whole point of tension.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I love the flat scene meeting is excellent. They're arguing over the dishes. They're arguing over towels. We're vampires. We don't put down towels.
Yeah.
Some vampires do.
They have the sticky notes on the plates. Like,
yes.
There's a shot of that later on. Please,
yes,
clean me.
Yes. It's just funny seeing these vampires who were once so powerful in this flatting situation.
Yeah.
Where they have to have a budget. Like,
we've all had roommates. It's like,
I know.
It's something you can identify with.
You can all connect to it. Yeah. And then I guess one of the big things going back to that blood thing is they need to feast on human blood.
Right, which is the one downside, he says at one point.
Yes, yes.
Of being a vampire.
Yes, so then it moves to they're getting ready to go out on the town.
Yeah.
And they've got to find their clothes.
Uh-huh.
And they can't see each other. They
yeah.
can't see their reflections. So they,
bit.
Like, draw sketches of what each other looks like. Oh, man. And the clothing choices they go with.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, they've never seen their image.
Right.
I mean, that's a very funny little detail.
Yeah.
That, like, I don't know if anyone had ever talked about. Like, we didn't do that in Redneck Vampire. We didn't think about
that's
that.
One thing you missed, Chuck. You should do a redo of it. And Vladislav says he's going for dead but delicious.
Yeah, dead but delicious.
I love that.
Jermaine Clement is so lovable, too.
And, oh,
like,
yeah.
There's something about him. He's got this. He looks cool as hell. He's got a good look. He's very handsome.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got that killer voice. The Kiwi accent to me is just probably my favorite in the world.
It's wonderful.
It's not Australian. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Aussie accent, but there's something about that Kiwi accent that just is funny to me.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Well, and it also, one of the funny things about it being in New Zealand is it just the way they speak and some of their idioms and sayings are so polite.
Yeah.
And they just sound, at least to me, nice.
Uh-huh. They do.
So to have these vampires and werewolves later just kind of being polite. I don't know. It's funny.
And
it's endearing.
The Flight of the Conchords thing, too. Like, I don't know if this is just a New Zealand thing, but the way they play it is all very kind of deadpan. It's
mm-hmm.
not very broad.
Yeah.
It's just funny.
Mm-hmm.
Situational things.
Yeah, yeah. Deadpan is, that's a good point.
Like they would, in Flight of the Conchords, a band meeting, like that would be funny. Just the three of them sitting around talking about mm-hmm. the next tour.
Right.
And, you know, Mary treating it like, you know, calling roll with them right there in front of them. Like all of that stuff sort of carries over. So I don't know if it's their sense of humor.
Right.
Or it's just sort of how it is over there a little bit. I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm curious too. If anyone wants to write in, can inform us on that.
Because Mary obviously turns up here as the alpha werewolf.
I love him.
Yeah, he's great.
I love him so much.
I'm kind of wondering if I would love a werewolf version as much because I definitely love the vampires more in this movie.
Yeah.
They're funnier, I think.
Yeah. I think it would be. I think so. Because they kind of do the similar thing where they're like werewolves, not swearwolves. And
right.
The scene where they're all transforming at the end, the directors told everybody in that scene to just go annoy the alpha wolf.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they kept coming up to him with questions like, oh, right. Like the combination lock. Right. Yeah.
He's like, try 0000. Yeah,
that's the factory settings. So it's funny to see the alpha wolf just be so not traditionally what we would think the alpha male would be.
Yeah, yeah.
I definitely would be into it.
And they're all dressed normally. And
yeah, and they got the track. Well, he has the track pants. And right. If you notice in the reenactment, he's the only one wearing pants.
Oh, really?
Because everyone else.
Oh, that's right. They're naked and blurred out.
Yes. Everyone else didn't listen to him.
Oh, that's right, because the track pants.
They expand when you transform. They don't
tear. back to Deacon, his intro is that he was, it's pretty great, that he was a Nazi vampire.
Yes.
Which was a pretty funny scene.
Yes. What does he say? No way. Yeah. So he had to get out of there. Uh-huh. The creators have said that that line always gets a really big laugh in New Zealand, but not in America. And they know why.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Just when he's like, I don't know if you know the Nazis lost. Uh-huh. It's not as big as a laugh line in the United States.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I thought that was funny.
I did too.
I did love the picture montage too. Did you freeze frame on that stuff?
Some of it, yeah. And I looked up like where some of those photos came from. I know one of them is some big election or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
I like all the throwback photos they did of them in their like quote unquote younger years in different eras, which is kind of fun too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it makes me wonder because. It's later when Stu comes in and kind of transforms their whole world.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that they were able to get these photos via a familiar because they can't go out during the day. So
right.
It was hard to process them. And back then, you know, you had to take it and then get it processed.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. I've put a lot of thought into the details of this. But yeah, they have to kind of, to make it through this world, they have to have a familiar, which is basically a human that does everything that they ask, usually with the understanding eventually with the day that is always moving, they will be turned into a vampire.
Yeah, which becomes sort of a recurring plot point with all the familiars.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, because on one hand, the vampires want to have this slave-master relationship.
Right.
And they would lose that when they turn him into a vampire.
Right.
But they want immortality. Who is the woman who is, what's her character's name?
Jackie?
Yeah, Jackie.
Uh-huh.
You know, she's like, I'm getting older, you know?
She wants to be. I feel like the best version of me I can be right now.
Yeah, she wants to be locked in time.
Right.
And he won't do it.
Right. He keeps pushing the date back.
That's right. But Nick betrays him later on.
Yes, Nick does betray him. But yeah, Jackie, she self-directed some of the scenes she's in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she, I guess a big part of her job is finding victims for them.
Right.
They're really bad at it, honestly. Like,
yeah.
They're just not very good. And they have to get invited into places,
right.
Which throws a real wrench into things.
That's all funny.
Yeah. So a lot of times they're trying to get into a club or something, and the bouncer's like,
right.
No. No.
Yeah.
So they frequently end up at a vampire club, the only vampire club in Wellington.
Right.
Which has like maybe 5-6 people in it.
Yeah, that was pretty funny too.
Yeah. So Jackie is integral in helping them find victims, which they prefer virgins.
Yeah, and that was funny when they brought in the two. I guess it was Nick, wasn't it?
Nick and Josephine. And it's two people. Jackie has to not like them.
Uh-huh.
So it's two people. Nick was her ex-boyfriend.
Right.
And then Josephine had like made fun of her in primary school.
She was the one that she called on the phone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if that was the same person.
Yes. Uh-huh. And that's one of probably the most well-known lines of the movie is when they're asked, why do you want virgins? And Vladislav says, I think of it like a sandwich. You'd just enjoy it more if you knew no one had fucked it.
That is a great line.
It's so good. Yeah, so she brings in the...
Yeah.
They both turn out not to be virgins.
Sure.
Yeah. And then a very awkward chase scene ensues.
Yeah, and some of that stuff is... it's also funny, but it does get... It borders on scary a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Not truly scary because your brain is not there. Mm-hmm. You're so in like comedy mode.
Right.
But I think they do a good job of like kind of bringing a little thrill to it.
Yeah, and the music helps with that.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of little gags where Vladislav is the cat.
Right.
Whether it's funny but freaky at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Deacon's like in a backpack and reaches out.
Yeah, that was kind of creepy.
Yeah, and it's cute because there's an earlier scene where Viago says he likes to make their last night nice.
Yeah, right.
So he's like putting down newspapers and asking this woman about her, what she's doing. And she's talking about this whole big future she has planned. Right. And he kind of apologetically bites her. Uh-huh. And then it just goes everywhere.
Yeah, that's when he hits the vein.
Yes. Just gruesome.
He's
everywhere.
Like, oh, shit.
Right. He's like trying to catch it in his mouth. It's just going everywhere. Oh, my God.
There's a couple of those with him. So, I mean, I guess the idea is that he's not great at being a vampire, but he's really good at being a den mother.
Yes.
To his flatmates.
Yes.
It's like some of the cutest stuff is the caretaking he does with everyone, like with the waking up scene and trying to keep the kitchen clean and stuff like that, which it's not. It's a disaster.
No, yeah. Doling out the chores.
Chore wheel.
Yes. Which vacuum is misspelled on that, by the way.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Oh,
Taika Waititi said he just didn't know how to spell vacuum.
Two C's or two U's?
I think it's two U's and one C.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one I never get right either.
Yeah.
I did think the locket scene was very cute and sweet. Yeah. And then, you know, you get when it starts searing his skin.
Yeah.
That was a nice little note, I thought.
Silver. Yeah.
But again, it can't just be jokes. There has to be some sort of character stuff there.
Yeah.
That you can latch onto.
Yeah. And he's definitely, I would say, the heart of the film.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then there are other things that maybe aren't as sweet, but we can still all relate to, like, Nick when he becomes a vampire, which he becomes a vampire in this. Peter bites him at the last moment. oh no, Peter got him.
Yeah.
There's the kind of tension between Deacon and Nick, with Deacon feeling threatened by, like, the new cool vampire, the new young vampire. And we can relate to that stuff.
Oh,
like,
sure.
There's an emotional thread there.
Uh-huh.
So those little, and again, the roommate thing.
Yeah.
We can connect to these.
Yeah. And Jermaine Clement's sort of character arc is both losing, like, I was once, you know, a great torturer of people and had so many more powers, and he's getting weaker.
Yeah.
And then his through line with the Beast.
Yes.
You know, that comes full circle too, which works.
Yes. Yeah, I love his storyline. Vladislav the Poker, I don't remember if we said, but that was his whole thing.
That's right.
Because one of my favorite lines in the whole movie is when Stu is showing him how to use the poke function on Facebook.
Oh, that's right.
And the way he's like, do you want to poke? And Vladislav says, yes. And he communicates so much with one word. It's great.
Yeah. It's like, this is what he'd been waiting for.
Yes. The digital version of poking. Oh, my God.
One of my other favorite sort of recurring bits is the Lost Boys food thing with the boschetti.
Right. Right. Which Stu, what does he later say? And I only got it this last time I watched it. Biscotti?
Yeah,
he
biscotti.
Offered me biscotti. Yeah.
Just the word biscotti made me laugh every single time he said it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the old joke from the, obviously, listeners, if you don't know, the joke from The Lost Boys was there was one scene where they were eating spaghetti and one of them said, you know, take a look at what you're eating or something like that. And it was worms.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bring that up a few different times in this movie as a recurring bit where they're trying to do the Lost Boys thing.
Yeah.
And one time later, it wasn't, I think it was it Nick that was trying to do it? And he said, no, it has to look like the original food.
Right. It's a scene where Nick is feeling like down on being a vampire.
Right.
And he's trying to make himself feel better. And
that's
he
right.
totally fails. Totally fails.
Would you like some boschetti?
Yes.
I'm just going to say that from now on.
You should.
For spaghetti.
So Nick, when he gets turned into a vampire, well, you don't know. And so you think he's dead.
Yeah.
But then it's one of my favorite reveals in the movie because it cuts to Deacon doing this, what he calls an erotic dance.
Yeah, yeah.
For what feels like a long time.
They held on that for a while.
They did. He is, oh, man.
Yeah.
And then there's like a little knock at the window.
It was one of my favorite bits.
And Nick kind of awkwardly flies in. It takes too long.
He can't manage it. Yes. It was so funny.
And then Deacon says, like, I was doing an erotic dance for my friends. I was in the zone. They were really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And they were kind of just watching it, like,
yeah. He's
blandly.
Like, why don't you just come in the front door? And he's like, but I can fly.
Right.
Like, not really quite yet.
Right. And that's probably one of the other few scary-ish scenes is his transformation scene.
Yeah.
It's both funny and scary, but, yeah, he is, like, eyes are bleeding.
Uh-huh.
He's doing all kinds of, like, convulsion things.
Yeah. They added enough of that stuff, I think, to kind of keep it interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, it, while funny, certainly vampires are still pretty freaky.
Yeah.
A lot of the things that they do.
Yeah, you can't ignore all that stuff. You got to include,
right.
even if it's not truly scary.
Right.
Like the, I mean, I didn't think it was gross because it was just so over the top, but the great scene where Nick eats.
He eats a french fry, he eats a chip.
He eats a human,
human food.
And the one chip, just like the projectile blood vomit that's going on in the parking lot. It's so good.
It's so, like, way, way too much, super powerful.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that comes back on the show. I won't say more than that. But,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's the scene where, again, they all have their little character arcs. Like, Nick is, he really loved being a vampire, and then he was bummed. He's like, I can't eat chips. I can't eat my favorite food.
I can't watch daytime TV. Yeah. I love that.
Stuart will get him a DVR, I think.
I think he'll be okay. And that is, so the vampires, they kind of like, they accept Nick, except for Deacon's not really into him.
Right.
But they really love Stu, the human friend of Nick.
I think that's why they kind of accept Nick.
Yes.
Because Stu comes along for the party.
They love Stu. Like, Stu, Nick goes down to talk to Peter and is like, look, everybody loves him up there. They love him more than me.
Uh-huh.
Please don't turn him. He's a vegetarian.
Right.
He really wouldn't be into it. And Peter's just nodding, like, okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, Nick tells Stu that they're all vampires. And it opens this entire world for them.
Yeah.
Because he is a real life, whatever he says in that movie, geocaching, uh-huh. IT, that is what he really does.
Oh, really?
That is him.
That's so great.
Oh, my gosh. And he's like,
we take systems and we...
Yeah, then we analyze the needs of those systems. Oh, man.
Anytime someone's talking about, like, optimizing systems, I just, like, my brain checks out.
And they knew that was true. So that's why they put that in there. But, yeah, he totally wasn't really an actor. He'd done some things before that, but... apparently, YTT sent him an email, do not take any acting courses in all caps.
Yeah.
Because he just wanted
that. Just don't do it.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder if he's been anything since.
I know he's... No, I don't think so.
I wonder if that's a one-and-done situation.
I mean, it's a pretty good one-and-done.
Yeah, I mean, he probably can't act.
If he took the acting classes, I bet it would ruin it.
It would totally ruin it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stu's just got to be Stu.
Because he's, like, if anyone hasn't seen it, he's boring in the most endearing kind of way. He's just...
Yeah, he doesn't over... I think the instinct would be to even try and do something like, oh, wait, I gotta be funny or I gotta, you know...
Right.
They really love me, so I've got to be endearing. But he manages to play it just right.
Right, and that's one of the things that elevates the humor of it is as we're watching it, we're like, okay, this guy's pretty boring and dull.
Yeah.
But to the vampires.
He's a superstar.
He's the most exciting thing.
Yeah.
And it's just seeing that kind of play out that is wonderful.
Yeah. He sort of is part pet, part connection to the human world, which they've never had.
Right.
And they all agree, you know, they all abide by the pact, you know, to not kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just great.
Yeah. And Deacon, who, by the way, has what I find a very lovable thing where he knits.
Oh, yeah.
He's knitting Stu a sweater. Uh-huh. Like, it's so cute.
And that was great at the end when the werewolves come in and they're commenting on his sweater.
He has, like...
Is that the moon?
I want that sweater. It is a very, like, bright moon...
Yeah, sort of Halloween-y thing.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's a play on that... The infamous Amazon shirt, the Howling Moon shirt. That's what I always...
Oh, I don't know about that.
It's just, you know, this kind of wonderful internet thing where people leave really funny reviews for certain products.
Mm-hmm.
There's this shirt that's just like a big full moon and a wolf howling at it. And that was one of the...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Picked up.
So I wondered if, because it has a moon on it and it's kind of a werewolf joke,
yeah,
that was the
maybe so.
Impetus for it. But it's cute. I love it. And it's funny too because he's the rebel bad boy.
Yeah,
but he's like making his own sweaters.
Yeah. With the werewolf stuff, the way they intro that is great because it's like it's sort of they really dive into that outsiders, you know, two rival gangs,
yes,
bumping into each other in the park kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, they kind of want to diffuse it, but they don't want to seem like they're not tough.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have to walk that line of, like, yeah, we could destroy you if we wanted to, but,
right,
like, it's not worth it right now.
Kind of the supernatural version of Hold Me Back.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I love when the vampires all hiss at them and then the wolves all start howling.
It's great.
It is so silly.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah. It's the first time you see it, that's a really fun reveal, too, because you don't really know there are going to be werewolves in it.
Like, right.
There might have been mention of them earlier, mm-hmm. but it's just like, oh, and they're equally kind of not what you would expect.
Yeah. They're sort of just like grunge, like flannel shirt
yeah.
dudes.
Yes. And as we said earlier, the main character, the alpha male, says werewolves, not swearwolves.
Right.
Like, he's always chiding them for swearing. So like they're trying to get in this fight and he keeps telling them not to swear.
Yeah, it's a really interesting juxtaposition because the vampires are all there's a lot of flourish and they are dandies and they dress up and they, you know, they're all like perverts and, mm-hmm. you know, to use their language.
Yeah.
And the werewolves just seem like regular guys.
Yeah.
Like, kind of regular nice guys almost. It's weird.
Yeah.
Because they're not intimidating or like big and muscular.
Right. I wonder if that's kind of due to the mythology of werewolves versus vampires, because werewolves, unless I'm remembering incorrectly, don't live forever, whereas vampires do. So they sort of had all this weird historical
right
anachronisms
yeah,
or things
yeah.
tacked to them.
Well,
but these guys,
hundreds of years old.
Exactly. But these werewolves might have just been
yeah like, I don't think werewolves live forever, do they?
I don't think so.
Yeah, because well, what happens is they kill Stu.
Oh, yes.
And disembowel him.
Yes.
That scene with it that blurred out was so nasty.
Oh, man.
And you've really, like, have grown to love Stu at this point. So you kind of,
yes,
like, it works for the movie.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely, especially at that point,
mm-hmm.
he's riding high on, like, the victory at the Unholy Masquerade. And they're literally chanting his name.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then this happens. So he's at his highest point.
Yeah, so he saves the day at the Unholy Masquerade by killing Beast's boyfriend.
Julian.
That guy was great.
Yeah.
Because he sounded like straight up like working class New Zealander.
Yes, he did.
With his accent.
He's just so put off. Like, uh-huh. Got the camera crew in here. What's that? And they could be texting their friends all we know.
Yeah, exactly. Sending vampire hunters.
Yes.
So great.
Yes.
And we did forget to talk about the bat fight.
Oh, yeah. And I love Vladislav, like, drunkenly shouts,
yeah,
bat fight!
Yeah. Like it's her favorite thing.
Right, yeah, because that's another part of this is that Nick is a new, recent vampire,
uh-huh.
which means he can get them into clubs because he actually knows people.
That's right.
So
he's like another bouncer.
Right, so uh-huh. they actually go out, have a sort of successful night out on the town,
right.
get a little drunk. But then Deacon, there's just this simmering thing where he's like, he even dressed like me. It's just
yeah.
there the whole time. And it breaks out into a bat fight.
Yeah.
Oh, and he keeps telling everybody they're vampires. He keeps saying, I'm yeah. Twilight. Have you seen yeah. Twilight? I'm Twilight.
Uh-huh. I'm a vampire. I'm a vampire.
Yep. And importantly, one of them says, oh, really? I'm a vampire hunter.
Right.
And he's like, which no, you're not.
Yeah, which is the guy.
Yes.
Who comes back.
And I love how he says, I'll Skype you.
Uh-huh.
I'll Skype you. Yeah, so it results in a bat fight, a drunken bat fight.
Yeah, and the bat fight starts because Nick is trying to get away, because he's not that great at fighting yet either.
You're right.
So he launches into bat mode and flies away, and then immediately Deacon does, and that's when it's bat fight time.
Yes. And I think they did that. I read they did that because it was less expensive than if they had tried to do like a levitating
uh-huh.
fight. So they were like, let's just do bats. And it worked out wonderfully.
Yeah, yeah, it makes for a good joke, I think.
Yeah.
Because it happens a few times in the movie.
Right.
Where they turn into bats, and it's always kind of funny.
Right.
So. And I have seen some of the few TV episodes I've seen have some good bat stuff.
Yeah. One of the characters in that show, Laszlo, when he turns into a bat, he always shouts, bat!
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, I'm going to start watching that tonight.
Definitely, definitely again, do.
I'm just going to start over.
Mm-hmm.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
So yeah, The Unholy Masquerade is when we finally see Beast as well.
Yes.
Who turns out is not, it's an ex-girlfriend. It's not some, you know, it's built up that
right.
It's this big, horrible beast.
Right. And one of the hilarious parts of that is every time he says the beast, he says it with such a weight, with such a
uh-huh.
heaviness.
Yeah.
And it cuts to like a medieval drawing of a monster and the uh-huh. music, there's like an ominous tone that rings.
Yeah.
And it's revealed to be Pauline.
Right.
His ex-girlfriend.
And he just calls her Beast.
Yes.
She's not the Beast to anyone else but him.
Yes. And she is the honored guest at the Unholy Masquerade.
Yeah.
To which Vladislav completely flips out. And you get this really funny kind of montage of their relationship and uh-huh. how it's like vampire-esque but still just a bad
yeah.
like fighting between boyfriend and girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that it's that grounding and all the mundane like with the roommate stuff.
Right.
That like makes it work so well, I think.
Right. Oh, that is such a great part. And that's one of my other favorite lines as they're getting ready for the Unholy Masquerade. They're trying to get Vladislav mm-hmm. to like come and he said, oh, I don't think I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And he finally turns around and he looks horrendous.
Yeah.
Looks like he's like turning into stone or something. And he says, leave me to do my dark bidding on the internet. And he's on eBay. He's bidding for a table.
Was he? I didn't
yes.
notice that. Oh, that's
my
so funny.
My dark bidding on the internet. That's so good.
What? Why did he look that way? What was going on there?
I think he was just having a weird... Like, because I know vampires can do glamours
uh-huh.
To make themselves
oh, right.
look a certain way. I think he just...
Was that it?
I think so.
Okay, I couldn't quite figure that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah.
It was funny either way.
Yeah. And one of my other favorite parts, if any of my friends are listening, they're going to roll their eyes because every time I watch this part, I'm like, okay, this, I have to talk about this.
Uh-huh.
And it's when Peter dies.
Yes.
So it kind of cuts to from the previous scene where they're all out partying
mm-hmm.
to you hearing the screaming
mm-hmm.
and they open the door to Peter's basement and he's on fire.
Yeah.
And Viago's like, get some water.
Yeah.
And Vladislav runs down the hall. And then he comes back and he has like this tiny little thing of water. And he's like, ah! And he throws it. It gets nowhere near him.
Just down the stairs, basically. Yeah.
And it's not enough anyway.
No.
And the way he says, Peter dies. The way he says, our friend has just been killed in a tragic sunlight accident.
Yeah.
He's not trying to be funny. That's the beauty of it. It's sad what's just happened.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious the way he delivers it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So what had happened? It was
the vampire hunter.
Right. That's right.
He broke in and Peter heard it and started to attack him. But then the sun rose and the sunlight came in. And he burst into flames and died. And this is followed.
Well, then they have this murder scene with the cops.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that scene is so good, too. So one of them, O'Leary, who's the woman, she is a kindergarten teacher.
Oh, really?
Not an actor.
Wow.
And she did amazing.
Yeah. I would have figured it was a cop.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So two cops show up. They heard like a sound complaint.
Uh-huh. That's right. They heard some shrieking and smoke.
Yes. So Viago hypnotizes them so they won't notice anything that's wrong. And like a fight is broken out between Nick and Deacon. So they're levitating, fighting. And there's just a series of really hilarious tension building.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, hold on. And they shine a flashlight on them flying. And the music is like building.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, not a smoke detector in sight.
Right.
It's so good.
Yeah. All that stuff is really funny.
Yes. Because
they do eventually make their way to the basement.
Yeah.
With like two dead bodies on the floor.
Uh-huh.
Like one has been charred to a crisp.
Yep. And they say, look at this guy. He's not having a good time. He's going to feel terrible tomorrow morning. You can't just leave him there. Get him a blanket. It's excellent. And then Deacon, I think it's Deacon, is like, should we just kill them?
Right.
And Viago, Vladislav says, let's see what other safety tips they have.
Yeah.
Then we'll see.
Just so silly.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to lose Peter. You know, you somehow get attached to him a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though he's like this scary and like non-speaking, you know, Nosferatu.
Right.
But there was, I don't know, there was something about losing him that was kind of like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently there was a scene that got cut where there was a funeral scene and they threw his body in the river. And then they accidentally lost the fake corpse and they had to release a press statement.
Oh, really?
If you find a charred corpse.
Oh, wow. Floating. This was us. That's pretty good.
Yes.
So then Nick goes on trial.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny, too. That's a good scene.
Yeah. They kind of have a list of grievances
against
Nick. And they, of course, start with like a really silly one.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like, you told Stu. Oh, but we love Stu.
Right,
That's fine. But then you helped get Peter killed.
Right.
Yeah. And they decide to do the procession of shame.
That's right.
Yes.
Which is very funny and silly.
Basically, they just walk around him shouting, shame, bad vampire. And then he kind of wanders off sadly.
Yeah, that was a funny smash cut. And he's barred from the house.
Yeah. But Stu's allowed to come whenever.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I thought that scene was funny, too, because they have the debate over what indefinitely means. And Deacon is like, you know, indefinitely means forever. And they're all like, no, technically it means like just not a definite period.
Right. But a long time.
And Nick is like, so it could be tomorrow.
Right.
And then they say, no, like at least 6 months.
Yeah. Yes.
But Stu, of course, can come and visit.
Of course. I love Stu. He is welcome. And then, yeah, I guess it does. The next thing is the unholy masquerade, the revelation of the beast, Pauline. And then they go and it's just this really silly party.
Yeah, it's funny. I like the setup early on when Taika Waititi's talking about what it is. And he's like, it's great. You know, they're zombies.
Yeah.
And you can tell there's like a class system within this thing. And that zombies are like fall pretty low on the list.
Right. They were one of the zombies there was talking about the stereotype that they walk with their arms out and just moan and how he's so tired of it. It looks like it's in a gym, like a, I don't know, community center or
something. I'm sure they just found some cheap place.
Which I adore as well. And then that's when you learn that Nick has made Jackie a vampire.
That's right. Which was a pretty good reveal.
Yes.
Yeah, all the little character arcs, and they really all come full circle.
Right.
Which works out really well, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's fun because
she's got the teeth.
Yeah.
She's like, look.
Yeah, she's so excited about it.
Yeah.
It's really fun because I guess you don't expect all of these things to pay off well, or maybe you didn't even – you forgot about a certain thing. But it right. all does kind of come together, and a lot of it comes together at this party because Pauline – they discover Stu is human because Nick bought a plus one
right.
as Stu. Uh-huh. and there's kind of this rumbling, well, we got to eat the human.
Yeah, like Beast is interested.
Yes.
And, you know, and right. everyone else is like, no, you don't eat Stu.
Right. right. And then Vladislav shows up and like, such yeah. a dramatic entrance.
That's great.
And then has the silliest little slap fight. Uh-huh. Which he loses with Pauline's now boyfriend, Julian.
Uh-huh.
And Stu impales Julian.
Yeah, that was a nice reveal, too, because you don't know who did it at first.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't expecting it. It turns, and there's Stu.
Yeah, I think I thought it was going to be Nick for some reason.
Yeah.
It's like a little redemption for him.
Yeah, I could have seen that.
But it's kind of perfect that it was Stu.
Yes, the human.
Yeah.
In the group, the kind of boring IT human.
Uh-huh.
I love when they're like, tell us what you do, Stu. Tell us what you do. And he's like, oh, system engineer, geo caching analyst. And he's a virgin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
like immediately.
Well, they managed to get him out of there, though, which I thought was kind of funny. Like,
yeah.
I would have thought he would have just been descended upon.
Right.
But it's sort of like the fight starts at the club and you exit out the back door really quickly.
Right. And this is where it cuts to them chanting Stu's name.
Yeah.
And
riding high.
Yeah. Vladislav is like, I'm so glad we both equally contributed to that fight.
You're like, well, really, it was Stu.
right. And then Stu says, I hope this doesn't make things awkward between you and the Beast.
Yeah.
And Vladislav says, I think it's open new possibilities.
That's right, because they kind of try to get together again.
They do.
That even pays off.
They do, but what does he say? Like, so when you can remember why you broke up in the first
right.
place.
Arsehole.
Yes. yes. Oh, I saw such a good cosplay of them at Dragon Con one year.
Really?
And the Beast. It was so good.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
Oh, they looked exactly like them.
Really?
That was great. Yeah. And so they're walking home and they run into the werewolves.
Yeah, that whole second werewolf scene is really good.
I love it. It's very sweet. I there's just something about how they're like trying to – there's this camaraderie there.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to chain each other up so they won't hurt anybody.
Right.
But there's just, again, the boring like, oh, you can't remember the combination lock. Why
right.
didn't you wear tracksuit pants? You lost all those clothes, guys.
Yeah.
And he keeps – the leader of the alpha male, he keeps trying to get the like, go away. We're transforming. Can't you see we're about to transform?
Yeah, like they don't want to
– Yeah.
They're nice guys.
They are.
It's really funny.
They are. But unfortunately, they didn't manage, because of all these questions and distractions.
Right.
They did not manage to chain themselves up. And I love how the alpha male, as they're transforming, he points at Stu and is like, that guy in the bow tie is going to go first. Then the camera guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they do get the camera
they
guy,
do.
Too.
They get one of the camera guys.
That's right. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
They really do a good job in that scene, though. It gets a little scary in as much as this movie can. And for not much money, they did the right thing, I think. They were super creative in how they shot it.
Yeah.
Quick glimpses of things.
Right.
A little campy,
mm-hmm.
like a little Sam Raimi, Evil Dead campy.
Yes.
But it worked. You know, they used a little bit of special effects.
Mm-hmm.
And the key with that stuff, when you don't have a lot of money, it's just not focusing for too long on it, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like you see that time and time again, especially in horror, which this is kind of a horror comedy realm,
mm-hmm.
is the second they try to show you the thing, your imagination is more powerful than whatever
yes.
they're going to be able to create.
Yeah, you just get little glimpses, very fast glimpses here.
Right. Because it's a comedy, but it could have veered into, oh, this just looks really bad.
Yeah.
And that's not the kind of laugh they were trying to get.
Yeah, it's a tightrope sometimes with these mockumentaries.
Right.
Because you got to get that tone just right.
Right.
If it veers too far in the wrong direction, you've lost them for a scene.
Exactly, yeah. And if they had done a poor job there, then I feel like you would have been laughing for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Instead of, oh, Nick is very awkwardly trying to fight them as he levitates right. and trying to save Stu. Like, Stu dies such a long death.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Nick just keeps yelling, Stu!
Well, Nick feels like he's just, at the end, he's just kind of levitating to stay out of the fray a little bit. Yeah. He's like, I'll just be up here.
Right, right. And poor Stu gets mauled. And this is one of my, I think this is my last quote I'll include.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites is when Nick and Deacon are having a bonding thing. Nick is very upset that Stu has died. And so Deacon's trying to comfort him. And he's talking about how that's the problem with humans and friends is that they die.
Yeah.
And he says, whether it's slipping and falling onto a spike or falling asleep in a pile of leaves and having some of them block your windpipe or making the simple mistake of fashioning a mask out of crackers and being attacked by ducks and swans and geese. I love it.
It's so out there.
The simple mistake of making a cracker out of mask.
It's so funny. Oh, my God.
It's excellent.
Like, to think that someone improv'd that is just ridiculous.
Yes. Because it's like, it starts silly and it just veers off into...
Yeah, it just gets ridiculous.
Because every time you think, oh, okay, falling asleep in a pile of leaves.
Right. And,
oh, the simple mistake of putting a mask of crackers on your face.
It's so funny. But, you know, you can't... It would have been a crime if they had lost Stu forever.
Right.
They had to bring him back.
They did.
And that was kind of the perfect way to get to end this movie, was bringing Stu back.
Yep.
He's a werewolf now. Mm-hmm. He's got these cool scars on his face.
Yeah. He shows up at their house. He's got a whole posse, the whole posse of werewolves with him. And it's kind of this tense moment at first, and they're sussing each other out.
Yeah, yeah.
But then Stu is able to bring them together.
Yeah.
And the alpha male compliments Deacon on his sweater.
That's so great.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that moment in, did you see Swingers?
Mm-mm.
You know the movie, though?
Yeah.
Well, there's a scene in Swingers where these guys all get in a big fight in a parking lot or don't get in a fight and almost do. And then later on, they end up together at a party and, you know, sit down and, like, start playing video games together and stuff. And one of the guys comes in. He's like, what's going on here? Like, you know, is everything okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, it turns out they're really cool. But it's sort of that same thing where the enemies finally get in a room together.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you know, we're kind of the same.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah. And Viago has this whole sort of scene where he's like, well, the smell is bad at first, but we just open some windows.
That was so funny.
Yeah.
The gamey dog smell.
Yes. Yeah, and I love the alpha male, the conversation he's having. Like, oh, yeah, I'm the alpha male.
Uh-huh.
So whatever I say goes. I make the call. Stu here said we should try to do this. And I thought, all right.
Yeah. Stu's maybe leading it over there, too, like on the DL.
Yeah. Yeah, there's kind of in the credits, there's a scene where the alpha male is calling them out for, like, why are you laughing? You're just laughing because you're afraid. And he asks Stu, well, why are you laughing? And Stu says, oh, I'm just laughing with the group.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, checks out. Okay.
I love it, too, at the end where he puts Deacon to bed. And you get that family picture of them all out there. It's just, I think they knew that having a lot of heart was a big key as well.
Yes.
You know, you got to really love these vampires.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You got to root for them.
Yeah. And speaking of, Viago decided to turn his long-lost lover into a vampire.
That's right.
And they're together. Funny. And he's like, some people might make fun of the age difference.
Because I'm robbing the cradle.
Right. And they found Ethel Robinson played her, and she was actually from a nursing home. And they put the teeth on her dentures.
Oh, my God.
That's so cute.
That is adorable.
They're very cute.
That was a very sweet scene.
Yeah.
And the shot of him outside the apartment when he floats across the room with his little...
Yeah.
And he comes around the other side of the window and he's got the flowers and everything.
Yes.
Again, just using just bits of that floating and some of the supernatural stuff, like for comic effect, was so perfect.
Yeah. And that's the cops show up again. And they, after this werewolf attack has happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're trying to figure out what did it. And they bring in, like, this cute dog. And they're like, nah, he's going to have to be put down. Like, it's so clearly not him.
Oh, God, that's right. I forgot about that part.
They have their own TV show, those two cops.
This little wagging tail, too.
He looks so sweet.
See what you did? He brought him over to the body.
Like, bad dog.
And I was just like, oh, my God, no. You can't do that.
Yes, yes. But yeah, it's super sweet ending. Viago, it kind of starts with Viago giving the camera a really awkward smile, and it ends with him giving a really awkward smile to the camera.
Yeah, he's such a sweetheart of a character.
Yeah.
He just wants to be friends, mainly. He wants to help take care of his friends. He doesn't want anyone to get in trouble. He's just – they could do 50 of these movies, and I would, like, watch every single one of them.
Yeah. They're just – everything they say, it's – I'm always so impressed with movies where it's just consistently very funny throughout, but also that heartfelt tone underneath. And I think that goes to show that the creators having that, what we discussed earlier, that kind of authentic love of the thing, but also putting in all of this hard work and fine-tuning it and seeing people and just recognizing, okay, that's what we need in this.
Yeah.
That's what people will connect to.
Yeah, and I'm glad he did this then before they had a lot of money and before he had blown up as a director, because it wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah.
Or maybe it would have been as good, because they're all super talented and funny.
Right.
But there's something about the sort of on-the-budget DIY thing that really worked for this.
Yeah, and I think it would have felt out of place, because the gag is that it's sponsored by the New Zealand Tourism Documentary Board.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it would have just – it works that it's sort of low res. It still looks great, but it has that kind of vibe of...
Yeah, all the nighttime stuff, it's clearly lit by just like a single flashlight, spotlight.
Right.
That all really works.
Mm-hmm.
All these night shoots, those are tough.
Yeah, yeah.
There's really hardly anything during the day for obvious reasons.
Yeah. There is one interesting fact I read that because they shot the – maybe it wasn't 2005, maybe it was 2009, a long time ago when they shot the first short film that this is based on, that scene where they go out on the town, people are shouting homophobic slurs at them.
Oh, really?
And that was all – people did that. But this time they wanted something like that to happen and they couldn't convince anyone to do it.
Oh, no way.
So they were saying, well, this is –
because the times had changed a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And it looked like, I don't know the details of their permitting and their extras, quote unquote.
Right.
Most of this looks like they just like went into clubs. Like you can see the looks on some of these people's faces like, what is going on in here? So I don't know if they just did that or if they just got really convincing extras. Something tells me they just kind of.
I think so.
Set it up. I mean, I'm sure they set it up with the club. I doubt if it was like complete guerrilla filmmaking. But you can tell some of those extras are like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, there's definitely a scene where they come into, I think, the club Nick brought them to. And they first enter and kind of the light is really bright on people's faces. And they're all looking at it.
That's some of the stuff I was thinking
askance. Of, yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sure this camera crew comes into the club. You're trying to party. Like,
with those four
with
dresses.
Those guys,
and Peter walking in.
Yes.
It's funny, though, because with some clubs, some of that stuff might be like, if you go to a club in New York City and someone was dressed like that, they're probably like, oh, yeah, look at that cool sort of cosplaying club goer.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons they chose, because they were debating on where they're going to set the TV show. One of the reasons they chose New York is specifically Staten Island, because they can be out of place there, but in Manhattan.
Yeah, Manhattan.
Manhattan. Ah, so good.
It's a great recurring joke.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. Mark Hamill's going to be in season two. It's my
first
crush. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. I'm very excited. I did want to put in here, there is an end credit scene that most people don't know about.
I saw it because I had a feeling. I was like, I'm going to let this run.
The credits aren't very long, so I don't think I never would have imagined it had one, but I think I just sort of stumbled on it.
Yeah. It was Deacon.
Yes.
Right?
He's trying to hypnotize you.
That's right.
That you've never seen it before.
Right, right, right.
Yes.
Yeah, because that was kind of one of the funny jokes
that
they would do. Even when Nick early on was introducing Stu and he's standing there with him, he just sort of temporarily hypnotizes him so he can talk about him.
Right.
And then, you know, goes right back to where he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And none of them are great at hypnotizing, which is also really funny.
Yeah.
They're just not good vampires.
No.
That's the hilarious part of it.
Yeah, they couldn't be.
Yeah.
And even Jermaine that was once so powerful, you know, he's losing his edge.
Yes.
Which can be mined for lots of comedy.
Yes. I want to see his whole Facebook internet. He seems like he's really into the internet. He's on eBay. He's on Facebook. I want to know what he's up to.
Absolutely.
See it in the digital world.
So great.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything else?
No. I mean, I could keep going, but I think we hit the high points.
Yeah. So great. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen What We Do in the Shadows, check out the movie. I saw some people, because I announced this is coming soon, a couple of people were like, oh, that's a movie? I watched the TV show.
Oh, really?
Like, oh, man. Yeah, you got to treat yourself.
Yes. That's awesome.
And
that's
the other
amazing.
Way around, if you haven't seen the TV show,
yes,
get into it.
Yeah, it's excellent. I went into it nervous that it could, because it's 10 episodes, and like, how are they going to maintain? Uh-huh. They do. They really succeeded. It's sharp. It's quick.
Yeah. It's The Office meets, you know.
Oh, and
Anne Rice.
People will love Colin Robinson, the energy vampire, because we can all relate to that.
It's good stuff.
Yes.
I can't wait to, I can't remember if, I don't know if it was the first three. Maybe I watched the first three. Surely they had one, two, and three on a plane.
Because I think the third one, the third or fourth one is the hat one, cursed hat one, which is.
Well, I definitely saw that first.
Yeah, so you're near three or four. I would love to hear your thoughts when you get to when these characters show up at the show.
I can't wait.
Yeah,
I'm going to get back into it.
Okay.
So watch the TV show. Check out Redneck Vampire on YouTube, everyone.
Yeah.
There's a trailer that I put together, and then I kind of just served as the straight man / actor improviser. My friend Mike is who really like put the project together and edited it and everything. And we kind of ran out of time. We wanted to make it a full like 90-minute thing. But we did this over the course of like a couple of years. You know the deal.
Yeah.
Certainly. And so he ended up just kind of cobbling together like a 45-minute thing. So it doesn't have the full arcs and storylines that we really wanted, but it was fun.
The heart of it's there.
Yeah, the heart of it's there.
I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, check it out. So thank you, Annie. I know you've claimed a couple of movies.
I have. I came on one, and I'm already asserting my request.
No, that's great. You just put your flag in whatever movie you want, and we'll just reserve it. I mean, I know you claimed Empire Strikes Back, barring like George Lucas wanting to come on.
I will allow if someone cooler comes on and wants to talk about it.
I mean, if Mark Hamill said, I want to talk about Empire.
Well, as long as I get to
sit in on that.
yes, I will be quiet. Just an observer.
No, you could come in that. did I ever tell you about when I saw him at by accident at Dragon Con?
What?
Or at Comic Con. We were at the San Diego Comic Con, Josh and I. And a golf cart pulls up, and Stan Lee was in the front seat. And I was like,
whoa.
Oh, my God, Stan Lee. And I put my camera up and took a quick picture and was showing people. And they went, dude, Mark Hamill's in the back seat. And I zoomed in, and sure enough, it was Stan Lee and Mark Hamill in a golf cart together. I'm like, this is like Comic-Con magic here. And I was lucky enough to witness it. And they were just being dropped off at the same auditorium.
Wow.
But I'm like, man, that's a lot of star power in one golf cart.
Yeah, that photo is great. Very powerful.
Yeah, I'll send that to you.
Please do.
all right, everyone. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Annie. And
thank you.
We'll see you back sometime in a month or so.
Awesome.
All right. Movie Crush is produced, edited, and engineered by Ramsey Yunt here in our home studio at Pont City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations, prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.